football on off the ball.
It just feels like we're kind of watching Liverpool now in a bit of transition, where, you know, it's probably what we expected when Slot first came in, you know, that there to be a drop off.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Koigig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
I'm very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Koi Gig Podcast. Kathleen McNamee here with you this week to take you through all the happenings in the world of women's football, both here and over in England. And I am joined to do that by Karen Duggan. Karen, we officially have our champions, and sadly, it is not P-Mount, but a good game for you guys at the weekend against Athlone Down.
Yeah, unfortunately, we were never in the running, and Athlone are well-deserved winners. Obviously, we spoke about how good they've been and consistent they've been all season. They wrapped it up against Cork on Wednesday, as we expected that they would, did a professional job. Then obviously they played us at the weekend. They were going for an unbeaten season, but they did obviously do a bit of squad rotation there, which, you know, is expected. They have a cup final to look to. They're looking at doing the double there. So it was a good time for them to do that. You know, they probably want to play their starting team again next week and start focusing on that final. So, but it was a really, really good result for us. Our girls played exceptionally well. I think even with a full strength Athlone team, it would have been a very, very good contest. And like I said it for a while now, we've turned a little bit of a corner. It's just come a little bit too late for us to compete, but hopefully exciting for the girls next season.
Yeah, definitely. And in terms of that cup final, so that's on the 19th of October, it's Athlone and Bowes. Nice little warm up for the international break for all of us before we have to start getting nervous again about games.
I know that point yet.
I know the expectation is obviously that Athlone, considering the like last couple of seasons that they've had, that they should win this, but is there anything that Bowes can do to kind of stick it to them? Obviously, there's going to be a few celebrations as well, I assume, for them between now and then. Not to say that they won't be totally focused on the game. I'm sure they will. But, you know, when you have won the big league title, I can imagine you have to work really hard to kind of concentrate your mind on another big game.
Yeah, I think the fact that they did win it 2 weeks in advance, or 3 weeks nearly in advance of the cup final, gives Athlone time to go and celebrate as they should, and to then take a break and reset. Having that 3 weeks in between will have given them the chance to do that. That said, obviously, cup final, Bowes are going to bring massive support. We saw they brought busloads down to their All-Ireland Cup game against Wexford, you know, and that was a travelling support that they had to organise. This is, you know, it's going to be local. You'd expect them to bring out big, big support there. So that's something to look forward to in terms of a freshness, fresh crowd going to the cup final. But on paper, yeah, it's Athlone's. But obviously, a cup game is very, very unpredictable. I hope that it's competitive. That's what you want. It's obviously one of the only broadcaster games. Obviously TG Carr have done really well promoting our league, but this is kind of the one that's gotten traditionally the most eyes on it over the past few seasons as our league progressed. So yeah, I'm just hoping for a good competitive game between the two.
Yeah, and hopefully it's not the sort of weather that we saw for the cup final last year, which just caused absolute chaos in general for a game, you know. Yeah, I don't think anyone would like to see a repeat of that.
Yeah, we saw a lot of that this weekend though, didn't we? I think particularly the Man United-Chelsea game, they had to contest with some tough conditions, but that's what you're going to get at this time of year, and you have to be able to stand up to it. And like, it's all part and parcel, isn't it?
Just saw there as a, this is just for the men's game rather than the women's game, but speaking of weather, it just is kind of interesting that UEFA have just approved a new landmark move to allow Italian and Spanish men's league matches to be played overseas, which has kind of been around the place for a lot, but a lot of Italian and particularly Spanish fans are not happy about it, because the suggestion is that the games will be played over in the States or other faraway places. And the idea, I think, is, well, the UEFA idea is to grow the game, but it does seem like a bit of a move towards franchising leagues. And you can imagine if it's starting in the men's game, it might not be that long before it starts to trickle down or questions are being asked about it in the women's game. I assume this is not something you're for.
No, they can frame it however they want as growing the game. It's all money motivated, and we know that that's the way it is from FIFA to UEFA to the FAI. If there's an opportunity there for money making, they will find a way to do it. They'll capitalize on it. It's probably a way off, I think, for the women's game. I think that the like five-side or seven-side competitions and stuff like that, they were kind of a step towards that sort of stuff, but they looked like they were, again, good promotion opportunities for the games and something that the girls enjoyed. It's just when the fixture congestion starts and injuries creep in, that's when you'll question having to go abroad or play in these extra competitions as a way of growing the game. But yeah, we're a way off. But yeah, I think the Spanish and Italian fans, as passionate as they are, it would be... like it just breaks away from tradition, and like you say, you don't want to get into that American model of franchising and stuff. I know obviously the NFL came over here and it was big excitement and all that, and it's great maybe as one off, but I don't think it should ever be in real league. You know, there's a home and away, there's a structure, there's tradition to it that we know and love. So yeah, I'd hate to see that come in.
Yeah, it seems to be the prefer in the women's game to do like once-off tournaments, if it's like the She Believes Cup or something like that, or some of those tournaments that have been held in, well, I suppose those are international tournaments. What's the name of the one? Arsenal played it over in the States, and so did like Lyon and stuff. It's almost like a mini Champions League that goes, and they have some of the American teams involved in it as well. It has a name similar to She Believes Cup that irks
great
me.
Name, great
yeah,
name.
Exactly. You know,
horrendous. It's horrendous. Now, in saying that, if someone was willing to pay for a women's national league club to go and play in a warmer climate, that would be a different story. But we won't be doing it ourselves. We've closer getting a GAA club flying over to America to play a friendly than us. So
that's actually very true, probably.
I say that's definitely a while off. We don't need to concern ourselves with that just yet.
Maybe someday, Karen.
Maybe. I won't hold my breath.
Okay, let's look at what happened across the water this weekend, because there was some very interesting games, and we will start with the Friday one, which was Manchester United 1, Chelsea 1. I'd say a big step of progress for United in the fact that of the 11 times they've played Chelsea, 10 times they have lost. This is the first time they've gotten any sort of points off them in the league. And while Skinner was kind of saying after the game, you know, I like that we're not happy with this, that we should have done better, it definitely feels like a real statement of intent, especially considering the results in the other big fixture of the weekend.
Yeah, look, he kind of gave and he took away. He kind of said, look, it shows that Chelsea won't walk the league, but that almost intimated to me that they still will win the league and Man United probably won't do so. And that obviously, maybe that is a realistic, maybe realistically, they are still aiming for a Champions League spot, and that is still seen as a success in Man United's eyes, because like you say, rightly, they've never... but not only have they never beaten them, they hadn't gotten points off them. So to take for Chelsea's first points off them this season, having done the same to Arsenal, they can frame that in a really, really positive way. If you were a cynic, you'd say, well, they have to beat these teams if they're ever going to actually get to the point of competing for the title. But with the lack of backing and everything that Man United have and what they seem to be growing, and the signings that they made have been very good. Anna Sandberg, Rolfo, Park, they were all really, really key in that result against Chelsea at the weekend. So without a huge amount of backing and the way they seem to be playing together, I think that he's right. Man United are progressing. Definitely. Defensively, they've kind of picked up where they left off last season, and they have a world-class goalkeeper, which also helps.
Yeah, and like for a game that ended 1-1, it actually was quite exciting. Like even as a neutral, it was a good game. It could have very easily been a couple more goals in it. both teams were kept on their toes during different periods.
Yeah, it was a brilliant game. And like, if you compare the stats to other games, like there's so many more shots and good chances. Chelsea in particular, they really went at Man United in the second half, and Man United's defending again, it was there in abundance, and it had to be. In saying that, in the first half, Man United had a couple of really good chances. I was thinking of Jess Park. She went for a chip from a really acute angle when she should have just driven it in. But then again, on the flip side, Aggie Beaver-Jones had a chance from a Carpenter cross, and she's been in such like unbelievable form at the start of this season. We expected her to put it away. And then just good goals. I mean, you have to say that the Chelsea goal to go one up, that move was really good. Captain obviously got the goal, but Macario's little back heel. Man United would be a little bit disappointed. They play themselves into a little bit of trouble with slow ball out the left. So you can't give Chelsea those chances because they will punish you. But they limited clear-cut ones, which I thought, you know, against the strike power that Chelsea have, they threw everything at them. They brought on Kerr, they brought on Thompson, you know, they emptied the bench, they used their depth. And Man United, who don't quite have that, still stood up to it. They have the straight swap with Mallard, come on. But yes, it was a really, really good game. I think that we were treated to two really, really good games by what we see as the top four teams in the league this weekend.
Yeah, I would agree with that, barring result, of course, in one of them, which didn't exactly go my way. I know we've mentioned her a couple of times so far on the podcast, but it was one particular that Mark Skinner pulled out. You've mentioned her there already, and that's Jess Park. And we've obviously seen her grow into her role a lot this season, and she feels like a really important player. But what is it that you're seeing that specifically is kind of making her click this season? Like, is it just getting that bit more maturity? Is it the players that are around her? What's the difference?
Yeah, I think maybe it's the style as well. Like, Man City had wing backs and they had a lot of players forward, so you're asking people to kind of work in really small pockets and unpick defenses, and a lot of their game is based around Bunny Shaw. Man City's game based around Bunny Shaw getting those crosses in the box, getting the ball into her. A lot of Man United's game is quick breaks, you know, when the space opens up, exploiting those breaks. And I think for Park's original chance, that came from Chelsea committing players forward, and then Park was involved, Toon was involved. They moved the ball really quickly, like, it's a really good sweeping move. And I think that pace and where she picks up those pockets, the second balls that she receives off the defenders, her ability to kind of take it on the turn and go, and the confidence to go at players, she has more space to do that. And she's got selfless runners around her as well. You know, Toon will run. There's a lot of players in that Man United team who are very willing runners. They seem to have upped their fitness levels again this year. But I think she was always that good. I would have always really, really rated her at City.
No, I know we always would have rated her. It just feels like, and maybe it is everything that you're saying there, and the fact that they're, because maybe United haven't had these sort of players, whereas City have had like super, super stars. You're just getting the opportunity to see her a lot more.
To be honest, I think that's it. I think she's now a bigger fish in a smaller pond. Definitely, and some people thrive off that. It can kind of compare to where Grealish is with Everton. He's so good that David Moyes has said, go and play your game. I wouldn't be surprised if Mark Skinner said, this is the position you're playing, work hard defensively but pick up those balls and then kind of go and do what you want. It doesn't have to be prescriptive. And it doesn't feel like it is prescriptive when she's on the ball. She's very, very creative. But she works really hard as well. So sometimes you just need the change of scenery, like Chloe Kelly. Sometimes it's just environment doesn't suit. She never came across as unhappy at City, but obviously they did have more depth and there was a bit more rotation and their style of play was different. So it's just opening up a realm of like freedom for her. And obviously she's going to get more attention.
Yeah.
Rightly so. Her performances have been brilliant.
It's well deserved. Okay, we'll move on to the other big game of the weekend, and that was Manchester City 3, Arsenal 2. Kathleen goes and cries into her cornflakes. Season is gone, Karen. It's gone. I thought it was last weekend. Well, now it definitely is.
I'd like to get your take on this before I come in, because on paper you're like 3-2. They clawed it back every time, Arsenal, you know. They leveled it at 83 minutes. So I want to get your take as a fan.
So as a fan, I think what frustrates me is that, like, yes, okay, they got themselves back into it and that was a positive, but it's like being outdone by a last minute winner again, being outdone by a set piece again. It just all feels like really similar mistakes. And even besides the goal, it just, or the goal that came from the corner, it just kind of felt like there was no one in there taking command of the situation. People were scrambling at balls, trying to like almost just hoof them away. And I'm like, you look at the talent that's in that team. It's not the sort of team who should need to hoof a ball. You know, there's a lot of really, really good players in there who should be able to play from the back all the way up. And I know like City have been in great form this season and they really seem to be clicking under Jurgen. So I'm not suggesting that Arsenal should necessarily be better than them completely. It's just more that when they played badly, the mistakes seemed very rudimental and simple, and the sort of things that they should be able to do a lot better than they currently are.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, because, you know, Arsenal are European champions and City, they didn't really compete for a huge amount last year, and City always looked like they had more belief that they were going to be the ones to go and score more goals. And City gifted a couple of chances, and they allowed, I think the City were a little bit asleep after halftime and allowed Caldente to come back in a really good finish. And you thought maybe Arsenal got a bit of a rollicking at halftime and that might have spurred them on. But again, it was City who just seemed to have more energy or something. And I'd love to get Kasper Eyes' stats, because She's down as a wing back. She's overlapping strikers in every game. She's been relentless for City this season, up and down that right hand side, and obviously linking really well with Bunny Shaw, who seems back to herself. And she was still going in the 88th minute, tormenting the Arsenal defence and setting up that goal for Benny. And I think we need to give her a shout out. I know we got really excited about her during the Euros, because for an 18-year-old, we were like, wow, the confidence she showed, and she was the person popping up everywhere for Switzerland during the Euro. So we were excited to see her. But like, that's a really, really big step. We've seen a lot of our 18-year-olds go to the WSL, and, you know, they've had to go out and loan, they've had to do this, that and the other. But she's coming on and she's scoring against Arsenal. And I think like she's a watch this space girl, because she could be something special.
Definitely. And it was the sort of goal that was even hard to be annoyed about when it happened. Like, coming from her, the fact that we have seen her develop on so much from the Euros already, and it's only a couple of games into the season, I definitely felt that, same as you, she is a one to watch. There's something you said there about the, oh, but Arsenal probably getting a bit of a bollocking at a half time, and that kind of like spurred them on a bit. But that also feels like such a thing, like a theme of this season, where they concede early, or they're not great in the first half, or we make substitutions super, super early into the game and all of a sudden things change. And it goes back to what I said last week when we were talking about Arsenal, and the fact that that to me just feels like a symptom of not knowing your best team, or not knowing what the combinations are for these sort of games.
Exactly. There was three changes again. Obviously, Ruben Moy coming in for a teenager, that's okay. You don't want to overexpose an 18-year-old too early. Maybe she needed the rest. That's fine. But again, it was Ford and Pelova this time. It was Mead and Blackstenius, or it's someone else. You know, like you said, there's a little bit too much rotation. And yeah, it's brave making these subs early and they are having an impact, but you don't want to be chasing, always chasing. And I think, feel like there's a little bit of that with Arsenal at the moment. And for them to obviously not only be below Man United, but to be below Spurs, you'd expect maybe there to be, you know, Chelsea, City, thereabouts. But looking up at the table, and they are looking up now because there's 3 points between fifth and fourth, which we probably wouldn't have expected. It's do or die time really for Arsenal if they're going to put themselves in a position, A, to compete for a title, but B, for Champions League.
Well, that's the thing. You're kind of looking at it now and they're playing Lyon on Tuesday. That's not the sort of game that you really want to be going into after a defeat like this. Or at any, in any case, it's prompting the need for an absolutely massive turnaround of form and a massive turn up for the players. And if that doesn't happen, then like you're going to very quickly have a very unhappy fan base, because like it's not too far out of the realm of possibility that the only way to get a Champions League spot this year is to win it again. And obviously,
look, it's within
their capability.
It took
a long time to do it last year, never mind, you know, doing it two times in a row.
I know. But they did it, and it is within their capabilities. They'll know that they're playing within themselves at the moment. But like you say, now that we feel like they need a turnaround, that takes a lot of energy, like physically and emotionally, to do that. So we'll have to see how they manage that. But in terms of Man City, obviously have to give them a lot of praise. They found a way for Shaw and Miedema to play in a team together. They are doing it now without Hemp and Carolyn. So you're thinking of them coming back and the options that that provides them. If they were in Arsenal's position, they can also spring players from the bench, and you've got obviously Bene doing the same. Set pieces are looking like they're going to be really, really big for City, because it's very hard to stop those Greenway crosses to Bunny Shaw at the back post, and it just causes chaos. Whether she's the one who gets it on target or not, she puts it in the area and they've got bodies in there. And unless you are on it defensively, it's very, those situations are just kind of potluck. Ball can just hit off you, hit off Kasperi to put them 2-1 up. And while it's not the prettiest thing in the world, it's very, very effective. And it's going to be, it's important for a lot of teams. I think set pieces, when you look at another of the couple of games like London City Lionesses, or if you looked at, I think, Villa's win as well, it's all set piece based. So it's for a City to have that in their armory. It's hard to stop. Hard to stop.
Yeah. Well, they've definitely seen that, and frustrating as well from an Arsenal perspective, because set pieces used to be one thing that they were quite, maybe not necessarily always defending against, but quite good at scoring. So it'd be nice to have that back a little bit. You mentioned their London City Lionesses, and it kind of feels like a natural move on, just considering Gareth Taylor being at Liverpool. Former friend of the pod, Emma Carroll, saying Gareth Taylor out today. I mean, I feel like Liverpool was a difficult club to get no matter what. It was always going to be hard. It's a small squad. The investment isn't being put in there. But considering what we saw with him at City, what we're seeing now, you know, one league goal, even in that game, they only had two touches in the opposition box, you know, one shot on target. There was just so little going their way. And now, in fairness, there maybe was some question marks around the penalty, but even still, it's looking a bit grim.
There was question marks around the penalty, but in terms of the team with the momentum and the team that looked most likely to score at that point, it was London City Lionesses. Now, we spoke about Man United's game being, you know, 1-1, and maybe not that, but that had loads going for it. This game didn't have loads going for it, particularly from Liverpool. Their one shot on target was basically a back pass from a free kick straight down the keeper's throat. Whereas London City Lionesses, you know, Goodwin hit the post, a lot of it caused by Liverpool's kind of goalkeeper not being, you know, on her game. And when you're already down and you're already a bit nervous and things aren't going well for you, not having that trust at the back, we saw Man United men as well, not having that solid just core of a team.
Yeah.
It just strikes up nervousness, I think, in Liverpool. And I do have concerns for Liverpool. I think they're lucky that West Ham have been equally poor, but sometimes West Ham, at least, they're showing more promise in attack than Liverpool. I just don't think Liverpool know where they're at in that sense.
Well, like between the two of them, like, which whenever they face each other, that's going to be the kind of defining match probably of both their seasons, unless one of them can get it a little bit together for now, because like they're both on the bottom of the table with no points. Liverpool's goal advantage is a bit better. Their goal difference is -7 compared to -14. But again, they still have to face each other. It's going to be an interesting matchup because I would say that West Ham haven't been that clinical, but I've probably seen like some positive displays for them. They just seem to lose it in specific periods of the match, and then they tighten up, and then maybe sometimes, depending on who they're playing, if it's maybe one of the top tier teams, they might lose it again at some stage. But generally, it is always in a very tight space that they actually can see goals.
Yeah, I think West Ham is, their problem is that when they are on top in those games, and they have had little periods of time where they are on top in those games,
they just don't,
if they don't score within that time and the other team scores, they're not able to drag it back. They just don't have the resilience or the experience maybe to get together and drag that back at the moment. They have definitely created chances. They haven't been clinical. And again, it's confidence thing. Like, we're moving to a different game, but Martinez in the West Ham game, who had 10 goals in 12 games last season, who was so prolific, she had a chance inside the box 15 minutes in and she skied it over the bar. That was hitting the back of the net last year. It's so interesting how the team's form and individual form kind of intertwines and affects each other. Both teams are in a bad way at the moment, and that's where you earn your crust as a manager. So look, a lot of big conversations have to happen in those dressing rooms.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when you listen to Gareth Taylor talk about it compared to someone like Skinner, where he is just kind of saying today was disappointing, but you know, we're making progress. We'll get there eventually. Whereas you look at her comments after the game against Aston Villa, and she was like, based on the players, when I'm watching them individually, I just feel like they're all a little bit hesitant compared to where we were previously. The desire to run at people and be quite assertive was really, really strong. We just need to get that fight back, where we're a little bit more ruthless in and around the box, where we are a bit braver to go 1v1, and where what will be, but we're committing players and we're trying to create opportunities. That's something that we've just sort of taken our foot off the gas a little bit on, and we're looking for passes as opposed to being a little bit more direct and being a bit more confident in our own ability. Now, again, maybe they have different styles of management and personality, and Gareth Taylor doesn't want to say that much, but that to me is kind of what you, if you're a fan, that's what you want to hear from your manager. It's total acceptance that things aren't good enough, but it's not really drilling in on the players or making, like, picking specific people out and saying you're rubbish. It's like, no, I've identified the problems. We know they're there. This is what we're going to work on. Whereas Gareth Taylor is just like, vibes, well, we're going to get through on vibes, guys.
That's what I mean. Like, whether one is better than the other behind the scenes, we don't know. But as a fan, you would think you would have more confidence in that reflection from the West Ham manager, that they're going to go into the video analysis session on Monday or whenever they do it, and they will have their three or four key points that they know they need to work on from the previous week. With Gareth Taylor's comments, it feels like it's too big picture. They need to get back to basics and work on our back four with the goalkeeper and get that relationship right, get more coverage there. Let's stop making silly mistakes. If we need to go direct, let's do that. Then we work on going about getting goals, because they're really lacking in that area and how they build up play. They need to get back to basics. I don't know. He feels like he's trying to eat the elephant in one bite, you know, that kind of way. So I just think that I would prefer to hear the comments, and maybe it's not giving anything away. I think it actually just helps you feel like, okay, they know what's wrong. They're going to work on it. There's a confidence level that goes with that. And now in saying that, their goal difference is -14. So the great to have all and that and need to make better decisions in attack. But obviously West Ham have had a tough run in as well, but they were very much in the Villa game and they started really, really well.
I think if that chance had gone in, it would have been a little bit of a different story for them, or at least it would have given them something to build.
Morgan had a massive chance. Morgan had a massive chance. Martinez had a massive chance. Asai had a chance. So look, they created 12 chances. They got one on target. So that's very much what they're talking about there. Whereas Liverpool created three and hit one back pass.
Yeah.
You know, there's a clear gap there, and they were playing against teams that you would say are in and around their same level. So London City Lionesses, you would have thought they would be below their level because they're coming up, they're new to the league. Liverpool have the experience in the league. Villa, obviously off the back of a really poor kind of season as well. But they've turned a little bit of a corner now, and you can kind of see that draw last week really helping them, and it gave them something to build off. And then it helps when you score two absolute corkers, doesn't it?
Yeah. Definitely doesn't do any wrong or any harm to your situation.
No, I have to say Hansen, like a short corner done right, because as a defender I hate short corners because you go up and they so rarely work, but she absolutely pinged one in with her left foot, and that was great. And Wilms, who was taking all the set pieces and set up that short corner with her free kick, was excellent. Look, you can question the goalkeeper, but a great first goal to get in the WSL. Obviously moving from Wolfsburg is completely probably different league, different environment, going from a team that's, you know, perennial kind of winners, or they're fighting for championships, or they're there and thereabouts with Bayern, to where they are now. That takes a bit of adjusting, but they play some good stuff, and yes, great way to get off the mark for her.
Definitely. We should probably start paying them a bit more attention considering where their position is in the league. But Tottenham got their 1-0 win against Brighton. Bit of a weird atmosphere going into this one, because obviously there was the talk during the week about the racist abuse that Jessica Naz had warned. There was a statement from Bethany England before the game saying the players weren't going to take the knee anymore because they felt like it wasn't effective, and that was a decision that they had come to as a club. Martin Ho wore a t-shirt for the entire game that said Spurs against racism, and Jess Naz responded to it all by having a brilliant game.
Yeah, she was incredible. The goal that Tanberg scored, you know, it was a great cross. It was Naz set it up, she got the ball on half turn, played it to Nulden, back to Naz, and just bent a ball in around the corner. And there was two Brighton defenders between Tanberg and Naz, but the bend and the pace that she got on the ball set up a tap in really for Tanberg, who got her third goal of the season. You know, so much of the reliance for Spurs previously was on Bethany England to score goals, and then she picked up injuries and you didn't know where it was going to come from. But Tanberg had a really, really bright start for Spurs, and kind of dizzying heights that they are up there at the moment. But I really, really rate the manager. I like the way he speaks after the games. I like the passion that he's brought and the directness. I still think sometimes they overplay a little bit and can cough up chances, but yeah, they were worth their win. I mean, they created good chances on the break. Brighton might have shaded it, you know, with a little bit more possession. But Brighton's best chance was probably from a scrappy corner. But yeah, the work rate from Spurs, I think, is what's really impressive, because they are going gung-ho. They're going for a really, really high press, you know, and if you don't get that right, you're easily played around. But they seem to have it a little bit tighter than they had in previous seasons, and it's working for them.
Yeah, it does feel like Ho has kind of brought a level of control to them that we haven't seen. Now, we have also fallen into this trap many seasons where we see this sort of performance from Spurs in the first couple of weeks and we're like, oh, maybe they're going to do it this year. And then it gets to Christmas.
Oh, no, I don't think they're going to do any.
No, sorry, I meant in terms of like maybe compete for one of the European spots, or, you know, be up there with the likes of your Manchester United, or like where United have been for the last couple of seasons. I actually think they might be a step ahead this season. But, you know, kind of in that conversation that United and Liverpool had been in previous years, rather than thinking,
yeah, well, that's,
gonna
I think,
win the whole
challenge.
Thing.
Yeah, that's the challenge for Spurs. This year is going to be consistency, and make sure that they're not below that sixth, seventh spot, because that's where they need to stay for now, and then start to build from there. Because they're a big club, you know, they're an attractive club to go to if they can start showing that they can compete with the Man Uniteds of this world a bit more consistently.
And then for the final game of the weekend, I thought this just like summed up my feelings for this game in general, like heading into it and both when I watched it as well, that this game apparently generates fewer goals, 0.75, than any other in WSL history. Not just in like the season, in WSL history.
Yeah, no, I wasn't excited for this one, to be fair. Because you're kind of two teams that when they win or when they score, you go, oh, okay, fair play to them, you know, Leicester and Everton, you're like, oh, that's good, they're dragged themselves out of the relegation battle a little bit,
the exact level of patronizing that every team wants to have put their way.
You know what I mean? But
like, good on you girls, well done.
Leicester and Everton have been thereabouts in the relegation scrap for the last few years, and Everton, you know, that bright start against Liverpool.
It's looking less and less bright as the season goes on.
Looking less and less bright, but it's looking more and more important. And they have an excellent striker in Vignola. So I think that in terms of a relegation battle, having that one key player can make such a difference. We saw it with Leicester, they obviously had it in the form of a goalkeeper that season, where we really thought that they were going to get relegated, and then they got Leipzig. So it can make all the difference, and Everton have that in Vignola, I think. But Everton will be disappointed, not that they were much the better team. I thought Leicester kind of came at them and were worth their leveler. But if it was Mouchon's first touch, I think, and Ramsey got beaten near post, and not to go full green tilted glasses, but I don't think that goes past Courtney Brosnan.
No, I would agree with that. And hopefully that injury, we're still waiting on more updates in terms of how long she's going to be officially out for, but hopefully it's about, we'll give her like another week and then she'll have a week to settle into international life. Karen,
before we go into panic mode.
Yeah, before we go into full panic mode. The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, official snack partner to the Republic of Ireland women's national team. We will be back with you all next week for more chat about all the football that is happening, and then we will be getting very close into international territory. So look forward to that one massively. For anyone listening on podcast right now, Karen is making a face at the idea of having to deal with those games. But we have some weeks of peace left. Karen, thank you very much, as always.
Thank you.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. We will see you all again next week.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball, in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.